Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm your host, Mac Pritchard. I'm also the founder of Mac's List. It's a job board in the Pacific Northwest that helps people find fulfilling careers. Every Wednesday on this show, I interview a career expert. We discuss the tools you need to find the work you want. This week, I'm talking to Roy Notowitz about everything you need to know about executive search firms. Roy is the president of Noto Group. It's an executive search firm that works with consumer brands. He started his career as a recruiter for Nike, and he joins us today here in the Mac's List studio in Portland, Oregon. Roy, welcome to the show. You run a retained executive search firm. How are you different from recruiters and headhunters?
First of all, thank you for inviting me. Appreciate being here. Those terms are used interchangeably. So recruiters, headhunters, staffing, executive search. And really, there's basically three different categories of recruiters. There's people who are in-house recruiters who basically work for the corporation in the recruiting or talent acquisition department. And that job, you know, obviously is different than a staffing recruiter or a contingency recruiter, which is different than a retained search, executive search, headhunter type.
Yeah, coincidentally, Roy, several episodes ago, we had a staffing firm on talking about their company. And now tell us about what your firm does, retained executive search, because that's different from
the in-house,
and it's different from a staffing firm. Tell us about that difference.
It is different. And I think I would even say we're sometimes even a little different than typical retained search firms, but it's a more strategic relationship. So oftentimes, companies come to us when they have a specific need, and we are retained to fill that position, whereas a contingency recruiter is oftentimes not paid unless they actually fill the position. So they are working on a contingent basis. And so it's sad that we are categorized by the way we get paid, because I think, you know, that's just an unfortunate, you know, way that it's categorized. However, the value that a retained executive search firm offers is different than what a staffing firm or regular recruiting firm might offer. And it's not, one's not better or worse, there's just different situations.
Well, what is the different value that a company like yours, a retained executive search firm, offers both to employers and job seekers?
Mm-hmm. Well, on the employer side, sometimes they just need additional candidates. They might be trying to fill a job on their own. Staffing firms tend to work very quickly to generate candidates, and they have a lot of job orders, and they're working on a lot of them at once. And so the downside to that is they can only work on it for a certain amount of time. They have oftentimes less information and less context for the organization. And so that is where the retained search firm comes in and understands the culture, where the company wants to go, how it wants to get there. They're thoughtful about, you know, where we're going to find this person and build a narrative so that they can market the position to the candidates, and then also think about the selection process and what questions to ask and help facilitate that all the way through to the hire. Okay. Much more hands-on and involved.
And why is it important, Roy, for a job seeker, a listener, to understand that difference between those different companies?
Well, so on the contingent side, recruiters sometimes market candidates to companies or help people get job interviews, exploratory, because those are the types of relationships that they have. They can call. Usually they're more local. Usually they have like a focus like creative or technology or healthcare. And so they have a local network of companies they work with, and they're able to know if a candidate might be a fit for one of their clients, and they have sort of an open channel to share that. Retained firms, we only work on maybe my firm, you know, each recruiter has 5 jobs at a time, not 40, you know, so we might fill 30 to 50 jobs a year total, and we're only working on jobs that we're hired to fill. And so we're not in a position really to market candidates to companies, and our clients tend to be more national and focused in the areas that we're focused in. So a lot of search firms have a niche or a focus specialty area, an industry or a discipline that they focus in on.
So with a retained search firm, there are fewer clients, the employers that you're working with at a given time. And so the recruiter is able to give more attention both to the employer and to candidates as well, Roy?
Yeah. So it depends on what type of candidate you are. So for example, if you're a candidate looking for a job and we don't have one that's a fit, we can't really do much to help you unless we have an internal resource or person focused on that, which most firms don't, retain firms. But if you are a candidate in our process, what we do really well is understanding the company and all the different functions and how you might fit within that, and making sure that you have all the information you need to make a decision, and vice versa, that the company has all the information they need to make a decision. So it's a really strong fit, both from a competency and culture perspective.
Okay. And then in your world of retained executive search firms, do you find that large companies, particularly national companies, work with the same recruiters again and again over the years?
Yeah, I mean, if you do good work, then you tend to have those relationships because you really understand their business and become a true partner. And so we've had client, we're a 10-year-old firm and we've had clients for 10 years and they keep coming back. Not all the time, it's just when they have a key hire or they have maybe a growth initiative, or sometimes if somebody leaves the organization, you know, they come to us first. And that's not to say they don't use other resources for different scenarios, but if it's a key hire where they want to make sure they don't make a mistake potentially or reduce the risk of that, they'll use a retained search firm.
Okay. Now, our show is for job seekers, and many of our listeners are curious to find recruiters in their world. How do you recommend listeners both identify and work with retained executive search firms like yours?
Mm. Well, first of all, you know, we didn't mention it before, but the executive level position. So there, a lot of the other recruiting firms might work on lower level positions. So entry to mid-level or mid-level to senior level, sometimes executive level. And whereas the executive search firms tend to focus on director and above, sometimes just VP or C-level positions. And so the way that they would work with us, to answer your question, would be to make contact, like to establish the relationship and see if the recruiter is even a fit for their discipline or industry expertise. And I would recommend doing some research up front to find out who are the well-known recruiters, who are the people who have the most links in common with you, who are the people who have had been in their position for a while, seemingly have these client relationships over time. A lot of recruiters have been known to jump around. Just like with lawyers, there's good lawyers and bad ones, and same with recruiting. Although I would say there's probably more bad recruiters. We don't help ourselves very much. So, I mean, it's really, it's a you know, case-by-case basis.
Okay. Well, I have to ask you, how do you tell the difference between a good recruiter and a bad recruiter?
So a lot of times it has to do with how much information they have. So, you know, how knowledgeable are they about the client? What do they know about how the position fits within the organization with the other stakeholders within the organization? What kind of questions are they asking? Are they asking deep and meaningful and thoughtful questions? Is it even just asking the recruiter, is this a retained search or is this a contingent search? What's the relationship that they have with the client? And how long they've had that relationship and what they know is a really good indication of whether or not they are a good recruiter.
So let's dig into that a little bit. Is it a problem to work with recruiters who are working on a contingency basis? I imagine they have a role to play.
Not at all. No, okay, so there's some great contingency recruiters.
So that's not a sign of being a bad recruiter.
No. Okay. No. In fact, they just don't have as much time. So I think if you're working with a contingency recruiter, and same with a retained recruiter, we get so many emails. Recruiters just don't have a lot of time. So if the expectation is to go to coffee, which we get asked, you know, 30 times a day, it's impossible. We could not do that and do our job. So our clients come first, you know, making sure that we have people who are viable for them. And there's a lot of variables outside of our control. So whether somebody will relocate, the compensation, sure. whether they have the right skill set, if they're even interested in making a move and all that other stuff, and then the decision making on the other side of the coin.
Okay.
So there's a lot of stuff that recruiters are doing and don't have a lot of time.
Not a lot of time. So let's again, I want to be positive about
yes.
this, but warning signs that a good that somebody might not be a good recruiter.
Okay.
So you mentioned their understanding of the client and the client's needs.
Right.
So if it's a pretty shallow understanding, that's a bad sign, is it, Roy?
Yeah. I mean, it usually, if they don't have a lot of information, that's
okay.
probably not a good sign. If they don't understand the industry
okay.
Or your discipline very well, you can often tell that by the questions they ask or how they show up. I would say also just, you know, I'm not making excuses for recruiters for not following up. If you're actively engaged in a search, they should be communicating with you. The thing is, I would say, is just to be patient because things don't happen within 3-day segments. It's usually 3-week segments because people, executives are traveling. They have other candidates in the process. They have other priorities within the organization. And so, you know, we usually meet with clients on a weekly basis and go through and kind of keep things on track and keep momentum within the process. But oftentimes, you know, candidates have expectations that, you know, I interviewed with you last week. You know, how come you haven't followed up? So, so if the recruiter just doesn't ever follow up again, you know,
okay.
that's probably a good sign.
Good. A good sign of a bad recruiter.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So something to consider next time around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a break in a moment. But before we do that, I just quickly, what are signs of a good recruiter? That it's somebody knows their job and it's going to be a positive relationship. What just comes to the top of your head?
Well, for us, it's passion about, you know, we're really connected. We work with a lot of mission and purpose-driven companies and just being caring about the client and making sure you get it right. So the good recruiters, will passionately represent their clients and understand and be very, take a lot of care in that process to make sure that, there's really good information and knowledge of each and every candidate and vice versa, that the candidate is really on board for the right reasons and has all the information they need.
Yeah, and they're doing that even when they're representing or rather bringing forward perhaps 2 or 3 candidates, but they're passionate about those.
Yeah, and people. A lot of the candidates that we bring forward are not actively looking. So we kind of have to make sure that they're really interested for the right reasons and not just kicking the tire, so to speak.
Okay. Well, Roy, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to continue the conversation about working with retained executive search firms, and particularly a question you said you get asked all the time, which is, can people take you out to coffee? And I know people do that because they want to build a relationship with you, your colleagues, and companies like yours. And I'm wondering what the right way to do to build that relationship might be. So hold that thought, and we'll be back after this break. It's the night before your vacation. You've packed your suitcase, printed your plane tickets, and arranged your ride to the airport. Do you know where you're going in the morning? Of course you do. You want to make the most of your vacation. So you pick a destination and you make a plan. You need to do the same in a job hunt. And I've got a free guide that can help. It's called Finding Focus in Your Job Search. Get your copy today. Go to maxlist.org/focus. A job search is a journey. And as with any good trip, you need to know where you want to go. Otherwise, once you start a new job, you may discover you don't want to be there at all. Don't make that mistake. Go to maxlist.org/focus. Without a clear goal, you make a job search more difficult and painful. That's because it's hard to convince an employer you're the best applicant when you're not sure yourself what you want. Once you have a career goal, you'll have more confidence, and you can focus your time and energy on the jobs that excite you, as well as emphasize the skills and experiences your target employers want. Get your free copy today of Finding Focus in Your Job Search. Go to maxlist.org/focus. Now, let's get back to the show. We're back at the Maxlist studio. I'm talking with Roy Notowitz of the Noto Group. Roy, before the break, we were talking about how to build relationships with executive search firms like yours, because I know people struggle with this, and often the default request is, hey, Roy, can we get together for coffee, or can I pick your brain? Why isn't that the right way to build a relationship, Roy, and what's the better way to do it?
Well, for retained executive search firms in particular, or retained recruiters, it's because we like to get to know people when we have something that's we're really exploring with them, an opportunity. And that's where we really get to know their magic superpowers and their talents and them as a person, you know, and what their career aspirations are. And so we spend a lot of time doing that with candidates that are in process for existing opportunities. But leading up to that, I might know people for several years. And so the way that it usually starts is, or the best way would be to, with an email, if it's somebody within the industry who's at the right level in the right type of position, I will always invest time, or somebody from my team will invest time in getting to know them. We have people in our database, our system, where we're keeping track of notes, and we have an understanding of their interests and that in the future, these are the types of things or locations that they'd be interested in.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so it's,
let's talk about that email for a moment, Roy. So I work in your industry. I know you're in the consumer goods space, particularly athletic and outdoor wear and other brands. And I want to get an executive position in your field. Somebody's given me your name. What should I say in that email?
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you don't have any industry experience related to the clients and companies that we have, it's difficult for us to help you, because that's not what clients pay us to do. And it's a more – it's kind of
– So for career switchers, it's challenging.
It's challenging.
But for
I've
people
helped
who
– people do that, but it's not – I do that on the side for, you know, if I have time. But I think it's making sure that your experience is relevant and communicating that concisely.
So
you don't
find
need to
a recruiter in your
letter.
World, not somebody who works in another sector, and it's the sector you want to be in. I found you. I want to continue to work in that world, and I'm getting ready to hit send on that email. What should that message say?
Well, first of all, it's helpful if you can share a little bit of information about your background and what your strengths are as a candidate, but just I would say keep it to three bullet points. If there's a personal connection, like if somebody referred you, that's always something that's helpful. And you can look on LinkedIn and find there's a lot of people who are connected to recruiters. And so if you see somebody that you know well connected to that recruiter or multiple people, you can start getting information about that recruiter and getting a little bit to more knowledge about them, and that might help you communicate something interesting or meaningful or a connection that you might have with them.
And what is your ask in that email? You're introducing yourself. You're talking about your accomplishments and experiences. Mm-hmm. And should the author simply say, please keep me in mind for future opportunities, or should they ask for a phone call or a meeting? Mm-hmm. How do you begin to build that relationship with someone like you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's okay to ask for a touch base call, maybe a 15-minute call. I like to use this Calendly app that where you can schedule 15 minutes. You could send them a link that's really helpful for them to just quickly look at their calendar. It's the back and forth scheduling that's really hard. And more than 15 minutes, 5 to 15 minutes is hard. So if you can keep it short, just a quick phone call or touch base, that's probably the best way to go.
And what's the purpose of that call once you've made it easy. You've been clear about who you are, what you want, what you want to do next, and you've asked for just a quick phone call. You provided the Calendly app, which is an online scheduling tool for those who might not be familiar with it. And once you get that recruiter on the phone, what is it you want to walk away from that conversation with?
I think it's having them understand your strengths and having them sort of get to know you a little bit. So you don't have to have a huge goal other than I think it's helpful to have some questions prepared, specifically if you have thoughts about how to position yourself. I think it's really important, especially to have, if you don't have like a focus, you really can't arrive at a destination, a job that you want in the future unless you know what that address is. And so if you need help clarifying that, or if you need help positioning yourself within the industry the proper way, if you're trying to, you know, sort of move laterally into a different function or in to get new, fresh experience, you can ask recruiters any kind of question related to work, job, career stuff. But I think it's helpful to think that out in advance and maybe even send the, you know, an agenda in advance. You don't really have meetings without agendas typically. So I think it's helpful to have an agenda in mind.
Is there a typical agenda you'd recommend for a listener who's going to have a call like this?
Well, first, it's just to get to know the recruiter. I think people like to share information about where they work or who they work with or how, you know, their firm. It's good to remember that recruiters are also trying to build relationships with hiring executives. And oftentimes, we only get calls when people are looking and not the reverse. So if you really want to have a relationship, I think it's good to have a two-way relationship, thinking about what is it that the recruiter is interested in, whether it's topics, information that you can send to them, or client relationships that, you know, people you know in the industry who might be good contacts for hiring, and just also candidate leads. So if you look on their website and see what jobs they have open, if there's one that fits your skill set or competencies, then definitely bring that up first and foremost, and then or other people you might know for those jobs.
So think about what you, the candidate, might do for the recruiter. I'm curious, Roy, how often do people say in these calls or conversations, "Hey, Roy, what can I do for you?"
It does happen, and I think that's great.
And do you think is that a good thing to say?
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's authentic and you actually follow through with it. And at the same time, you know, I don't have very high expectations. I know and I understand that they're looking, you know, for what might be next. Sometimes they're urgent looking and other times it's a long-term strategy. And I think for retained search firms, just remember it's a long-term strategy. There's people I've known 20 years I haven't placed, and there's people I've known 20 years that I've placed three times. And it's not because those people are better. It's just coincidence that we'd have an opportunity at the same time they're available and that they were the right fit and all those other variables. It's kind of a miracle when it actually does all align in that way.
Okay. So after you have that phone call, what happens next? Should you try to check in with a retained executive search recruiter regularly? Should you wait to hear back? How do you see people maintain these relationships over a period of 5, yeah, 10, even 20 years?
It's hard. I feel like I'm speaking for all executive search consultants. I'm nervous than what they might think. I think, yes, it's okay to check in regularly.
Is that every six months?
Every 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, at most quarterly. I mean, we send out a quarterly newsletter so that, you know, candidates can subscribe to that. And I think that's the right amount of time to check in. If you're actively looking, you can check their website monthly, you know, because there's always new roles that come in on a month-to-month basis, or follow them on LinkedIn, on their LinkedIn page. So I think it's good to keep up with what's going on out there.
And I didn't ask this at the start of our conversation, but I think for many listeners, recruiters, whether they're working in contingency or an executive search firm like yours or for a staffing agency, are kind of a mysterious group that everybody wants to get in front of you, but they're not quite sure how to do it. Mm-hmm. How do you recommend when someone is beginning a search that what kind of research can help you find a recruiter in your field, in your right, community?
Well, it's funny. I always say, I wish I was as popular in high school. So I do get a lot of, maybe 300 emails a day.
So people do find you.
Yeah.
How do they find you, Roy?
Through LinkedIn, I think a lot mostly. And again, it comes down to how many contacts they have in common. So you can narrow down your industry sector, location, you know, job title.
Yeah.
And you can look at their company pages, see how many people are following them that are in common with you.
Can you actually search on LinkedIn by recruiter for a field?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that's something listeners can do.
Or a title. Yeah.
And they can narrow that to a geographic area as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'd recommend upgrading your LinkedIn. I sound like a LinkedIn commercial, but I mean, it gives you more ability to search and research and find information.
Any other tools you recommend besides LinkedIn for identifying recruiters in a particular sector in a community?
I would just say talk to your, colleagues, people you trust. Obviously, if you're actively looking for a job, there's a sense of confidentiality or, but I mean, if you also go to trade shows and, and events on a national scale, you'll hopefully get to meet those folks.
Okay.
A lot of them work with private equity firms and investment bankers and lawyers. So you can, if you have contacts in that space, that's a good way to find out who's kind of moving and shaking and in the mix, so to speak.
And while we've been talking about executive level recruitment, these principles, I'm guessing, probably apply to positions at any stage of a career, entry or mid-level too.
Yeah. I mean, we don't – at the executive search level, most people don't apply. So we're really just reaching out to people directly, or they're reaching out to us directly. There's not a lot of postings or – I mean, we put the jobs we're working on our website, but most of the time we're just really targeting – people who we want to talk with, and vice versa, they're targeting the people who they want to talk to.
Great. Well, Roy, tell us what's next for you.
Thanks for asking that. As a firm, I'm really interested in connecting what we do to a bigger purpose. And so we're a B Corp and we work with a lot of purpose-driven companies. And so our goal is really to be the go-to firm for purpose-driven companies and to connect what we do to their success. And so that's underway. And then we just started a podcast that you can sign up for on our website that is called Adventures in Hiring, which is talking about a lot of these topics, but from the other side of the table, from the hiring executive's point of view.
Yeah,
so it should be exciting and interesting.
I think that's an invaluable perspective because often I know job candidates wonder, what are hiring managers thinking? And it sounds like your show provides some insights into that.
Exactly.
Well, I know people can learn more about your company and your new podcast by visiting your website. That's notogroup.com. We'll be sure to include that in the show notes for the episode, as well as the website article. Now, Roy, given all the advice you've shared today, what's the one thing you want our audience to remember when thinking about what they need to know about executive search firms?
That's a good question. I think it's first and foremost, just understand that executive and retained recruiters are different than contingent recruiters and different than in-house recruiters. And so that's the first thing. And second is to realize that time is really scarce for everybody, including the hiring managers and everyone involved in this whole hiring process. And it's very time consuming. And oftentimes there's a really competitive pool. And so being self-aware, self-objective around, your own fit within that role, and also understanding that these things take a little time and communication is important, but also challenging. So I think it's incumbent upon the candidate and the recruiter to really keep that contact going with updates and things like that.
Excellent advice, Roy. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Here's the most important point I took away from my conversation with Roy, and that's the importance of knowing what you want and building a relationship with the recruiters in your world that can pay dividends over the years. And I love the specificity of Roy's advice about how to find a recruiter and then connect with them in that introductory phone call and do it in a way that makes it easy for the recruiter to say yes, and then having clear expectations about how you can continue that relationship. And sometimes it might be years before it pays off, but it also, as Roy shared, he's had clients who've he's been able to place in multiple jobs over the course of a decade or two. So that was terrific advice, and it all begins with having clear focus about what you want. And if you're struggling with focus and getting clear about your goals for your job search, check out our free resource, Finding Focus in Your Job Search. You can get it today. Go to the MaxList website, maxlist.org/focus, and download your free copy. You'll get a free step-by-step guide to setting goals. Again, that's maxlist.org/focus. Well, thanks for listening to this week's episode of Find Your Dream Job. And join us next Wednesday. Our guest expert will be Rachel Bohm. She'll explain how to own the room in a job interview. Until next time, thanks for letting us help you find your dream job.